and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing late Sunday evening. Joining me from New York City, up from Philadelphia, where he watched the 76ers play the Nets today and beat them, is Tim Bontemps.
I was actually in Brooklyn, where the game was. And then I came home.
Apologies.
I'll be in Philly to see Northeast Ohio's own Cleveland Cavaliers Tuesday. Big day.
The NBA, things can change that fast. The Cavaliers have now won 3 in a row, 4 or 5, upset the Nuggets without Donovan Mitchell on Sunday.
By the way, in this game on Sunday, Brian's MVP from last season, Jared Allen, plus 42 against Nikola Jokic. That has to be the best anybody's ever played in a matchup with Jokic, plus minus wise.
Drew several offensive fouls on the Joker. Cavs finally making a couple of threes. That's always helpful. And they get to play a couple of home games, which is always helpful. So they're back on solid ground. Joining us from Dallas, where he attended tonight's Kings-Mavericks game, where the Mavericks are coming crashing back to earth because their opponents keep scoring gigantic amounts of points. They gave up some – how many – I'll just introduce you first. Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. 261 points over the last 24 hours, if my math is correct.
How many did they?
Plus hours.
I was in Milwaukee.
132 plus 129. Did I do that math right?
That is 261. Well done.
Good job. That's North Texas, University of North Texas, right there. I was actually in Milwaukee today. I'm now in Chicago, but I was in Milwaukee today, and people there loved that game on Saturday night. Kyrie put up 39.
Oh, yeah.
Luka had like 35, 36.
35.
Giannis had 40. Dame had like 27.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody played any defense, and the Bucks won. The Bucks scored like 45 or something in the fourth quarter. They love that game in Milwaukee.
The Mavericks will play a lot of extremely entertaining games, because they are an elite offensive team and an awful defensive team. As Jason Kidd said tonight, I quote, right now our best offense is our defense. If we don't score 130, it's tough to win. And it's just the simple fact of the matter. When they play good teams, they tend to give up a whole bunch of points.
Well, the Sacramento Kings have found their offensive mojo from last year. And they put up 130 on the Mavericks in Dallas.
129 only.
129. You're correct. Well done. Some guy named Domantas Sabonis had 32, 13 and 6. Only went 13 of 15 from the field. I know he's just a throw in and a trade. Must be very lucky to find him. De'Aaron Fox had 30 and 7, which is an average game for him. So, in all honesty, they held them to average. That's all you can expect.
Kings 6-1 this year when De'Aaron Fox plays, by the way.
That's
pretty good.
We'll talk more about the Kings in a little bit. Raptors put up 142 today on the Pistons, who are now 2-12. So the Mavericks didn't play the worst defense today.
They didn't play the worst defense in the Western Conference.
That might have been the Portland Trailblazers.
I think we could remove might have from the conversation.
Who gave up 134. So this was the Thunder's weekend. The Thunder have a just absolutely awesome victory Saturday night in Golden State. Chet Holmgren hits a 3-4 overtime. We're going to talk about the rookies here in a minute. This play was fascinating. There is something that made its way around social media. There was someone about 15 feet away from Chet sitting in the front row at Chase Center who took a video. I wish I could tell them. I don't have it right in front of me. And that went all around social media today. It was on TikTok, went all around, where it was like, you know, the low angle of Chet hitting the shot. Andrew Wiggins plays 9.9 out of 10 defense on that play. Absolutely smothers him, hand 1 millimeter from Holmgren's nose, up on top of him, totally perfect defense on that play, does not touch him. But Chet Holmgren's got 6 inches on him. So when Chet Holmgren catches and turns and shoots a corner three, Andrew Wiggins can't challenge the shot effectively. Holmgren hits it, forces overtime, and then arguably, I think, one of the biggest killers in overtime in the NBA right now is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He went 5 of 6 in overtime shooting the ball. It was the second time he's in his career where he scored double digits in overtime, which that's not easy to do.
The sequence? How about the sequence when he bangs a three, blocks Steph on a three, and then after blocking the shot, ends up with a layup at the other end.
Transition the other way. And that was...
That was one end, other end, other end.
Yeah. Big shot, swat a living legend, dagger in transition. And Von Timps, as you said in the group chat, that is an MVP level sequence. The MVP discussion is way premature, although you've already got certain coaches lobbying for guys. But that, like, that is top tier superstar type of stuff that you saw from SGA in San Francisco.
So twice in the last 2 years, he has 10 point overtimes in the NBA. And then I will tell you, in the overtime session on the bronze medal game against Team USA, when he was playing for Team Canada, he dropped a knife into their heart in overtime in that session too. So watch out on Shai in overtime. By the way, this so far...
I would say, watch out the first 48 minutes too. First team ball NBA guard. Yeah.
Well, he had 17 points in clutch time in that game. He's since... There was no clutch time in the game against the Blazers on Sunday. He is averaging 20 points per game this year off drives.
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting a little bit more three-pointers, but geez, don't even bother if you can drive the ball that effectively. So they played, then they flew up the coast after that overtime game and won by 43 against the Blazers, who are 3-10. Shai,
in the game, they shot 60% from the field, went 22 for 36 from the three, 61%, and shot 100%, 14 for 14 from the free throw line. That is a pretty good offensive night.
That's the 61-61-100 flash line.
The Blazers aren't a real NBA team, though. Like, it's not
perfect. Well, right now they're playing multiple guys who probably would be in the G League otherwise. Yes. I don't mean to be mean, but they're missing a bunch of guys on a team that's already not good.
Listen, they've been competitive the past several games. They weren't losing by 45.
That's true.
Like, they got housed.
Well, anyway, Shai had 28 points in 23 minutes. I'm going to say that again. 28 points in 23 minutes. And Chet Holmgren, who we're going to talk about, had 16 points on 6 of 6 shooting. 6 of 6 shooting.
Also pretty good.
He is shooting 50, 40, 90.
And it's not like just 50, 40. What is it? It's like 55 and like 40.
Coming into today, it was 54.6, 43.8, and 90.4. And that was after going 6 for 6 from the field and 2 for 2 from three. So I suspect those numbers are going to be a bit higher now.
Well, they're certainly not lower because he missed no shots today.
Good point.
Okay. So on Saturday night, he had a signature early game, not just that 3-pointer to force overtime, but 14 of 22 from the floor, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 36 points.
And we were all talking about it during the game. The most impressive thing about that performance and about that shot he hit was he was god awful the whole minute before that.
Yeah,
made several critical mistakes.
He blew a point blank layup.
He blew a layup. He missed an offensive rebound that led to Andrew Wiggins hitting a shot that looked like it sealed the game for them. Had another miscue on the drive.
There's a shot clock violation where he, I forgot who passed it out to him. I think it was Shai, passed it out to him. And he's like,
Catch
and shoot. He kind of moved and you saw him like banging his head. And to have that tough of about a minute long span in crunch time and still not only want the ball, but to hit the shot you were talking about, Wendy, pretty tremendous cojones from a rookie there.
Well, and the coach draws up the play for the guy, because obviously he's a 7-footer. So if he can catch it on the move and shoot it, he's not going to get it blocked. And like Brian said, he makes this unbelievable catch, turning on the sideline, no room anywhere. His foot is actually up off the ground, so he doesn't step on the out of bounds line, because if his foot had been flat, he'd have been out of bounds, and bangs the shot. I mean, it was just an unbelievable play and a heck of a call by Mark Daniel, the coach of the Thunder, to put the ball in his hands after all that. Be like, hey, look, man, you're still one of our guys. We're going to trust you to make this kind of play. I mean, it was just, it was pretty epic. And lost in all of it is Andrew Wiggins. And we're going to get to the Warriors, but Andrew Wiggins looked like he was having the game Golden State's been desperately waiting for him to have. Hits this huge shot. Looks like they're going to snap this five-game losing streak. Everybody's going crazy. And then Chet hits this shot. Shea takes their lives in overtime. And all of a sudden, the Warriors have now lost six in a row. And, like, things are totally different for them, for what it looked like. Just a wild, wild sequence at the Chase Center.
Yeah, well, Dagenault had the great line. He's like, yeah, the best part of the play design was me drawing it going in. That's always been very much appreciated when that happens. Okay, so we are 1 month into the season now. So they will give a rookie of the month, and the first award, they combine October and November. It's like a six-week award. So it's still a couple of weeks away, but this is already shaping up to be a tremendous rookie of the year battle back and forth. And, you know, Victor, the Spurs blew a big lead on Saturday. It was not a great performance from them. They've lost. Have they lost eight in a row? They're flailing. But
eight or nine, I think. I'll look it up right now.
They're 1-6 this year when they lead by 10.
Oh, boy.
That's hard to do.
They're abjectly awful on defense. And it's not necessarily Victor's fault.
You could say they're abjectly awful in all parts of the game, really.
That's true.
No, well, they're a ton of points better per 100 possessions with Victor on the floor, but they're still bad.
Victor had eight blocks on Saturday night.
And they gave up 120 points in regulation.
Yeah, they have lost eight in a row.
It's amazing.
I know.
With the guy blocking eight shots.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. So Victor's played 13 games. Victor is averaging 19 points, 9.5 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 1.1 steals, and 2.2 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
He is shooting 43% from the field. This is where he's a huge difference from Chet. Chet is shooting a much higher percentage on taking, on a totally different shot diet. Victor is making 28% of his threes, and he's taking six a game. And Popovich the other day was kind of asked about this, and he basically repeated what he has said since training camp, which is they are not trying to put any sort of constraints on Victor's game. And so basically, like, Victor, if you want to take six threes, fine. You want to take nine threes, fine. They're really not doing a whole heck of a lot of correction. They just want to let him breathe, which is a luxury they have because there's no expectations on this team, and they are clearly, it's clearly not working. He has no point guard for a big chunk of the game. They do bring Trey Jones off the bench, but he's a bench player and Victor's a starter. I'm not sure how much time they're actually spending together, and that's affecting their offensive efficiency. And then defensively, they're just an awful team. So, but those are Victor's stats. Holmgren, and I realize that these stats are now not updated. So let me see if I can get updated stats. I think he's averaging.
So just because you asked, and I was looking it up. So Trey Jones and Victor Wembanyama have played 146 minutes together this season.
That's a lot, actually. Okay.
It's pretty high up on the list of Spurs two-man lineups. You want to guess what their net rating is when they're on the court?
There can't be any lineup that's played like more than 20 minutes that's got a positive net rating for the Spurs.
Just so the two of them together when they're on the court, 146 minutes. What do you think their net rating is?
I think it's pretty close to even.
Plus 14 points.
Okay, I was going to say, I said pretty close to even because when I looked it up early in the season, it was in that range. I'm surprised it stayed in that range as much as they've lost.
Look, I don't want to make everything a comparison to LeBron. People can rip me for that. When LeBron was a rookie, the Cavs started 4-15. They had no point guard, and he had some duds. He had some brilliant games, and he had some duds. And there were people kind of grumbling a little bit about this guy. I know that that's not what the memory banks say. The memory banks say he was great in the Sacramento game, and then he immediately took flight and started averaging 30-20. That wasn't the case. He had a numerous rough nights in his first 2-3 months. And then at midseason, like January, the Cavs traded for a point guard, Jeff McGinnis, who wasn't going to the Hall of Fame, but certainly knew how to operate a team. And instantaneously, the Cavs started playing over 500. Now, there's other play here too, but it was a big factor. And I think it's similar here.
There's really nothing else in play here because the Spurs have an offensive rating of 116.5 and a defensive rating of 102.5 with those two guys on the court, plus 14 in 146 minutes. In 242 minutes that Jeremy Sochan and Victor Wembanyama are on the court together, their offensive rating is 93.9. Their defensive rating is 117.1. They are being outscored by 23 points per 100 possessions.
And Sochan has never played point guard until this year in the NBA. And Jeff McDonald with the San Antonio Express News had a story recently where Sochan's talking about, he's like, man, sometimes I just want to say, I don't want to bleep and do this. You know, like this is a mental struggle for him, but I think he understands big picture. And listen, I don't know, it was part of this angling for lottery odds. I know the Spurs would never ever tank, but like the fact that the Trey Jones Wimby tandem is that successful, but it's not what they start and close games with, it's pretty interesting. And then they just like, I get wanting to stretch Sochan as much as possible. Pop has been very transparent about it. It's an experiment, but we've talked about it 100 times. I think Wemby is always going to need really good point guard play to be fully able to, capitalize on his insane talent. He's not going to be a primary initiator. And if you compare him to Chet, talk about an ideal situation. Chet steps into a starting lineup where he's got three guys who are really good at creating in the starting lineup, including one who's a first-team All-NBA player. And he just plays off of them and has played extraordinarily well.
Yeah, here's Holmgren's up-to-date stats. By the way, just to compare this, Victor is playing 30.2 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. Chet is playing 29.6. So basically the same minutes, just so you know about this. He is averaging 57% shooting, 46% on three, 91% at the line, 8 rebounds, so slightly, if a couple less than Victor, 2.6 assists, just a little under one steal, 2.1 blocks, and 17 points flat per game. Mm-hmm. So Victor's a little bit more in the totals numbers. Chet, significantly better in the efficiency numbers. And I thought I would, so real quick, just to refresh, Chet, 17, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. Victor, 19, 10 rebounds, 2.5 assists. I would tell you guys what a couple of historic all-time great big men did in their rookie year. Tim Duncan's first month as a Spur, 1997. He played 36 minutes a game, so 6 minutes more than these guys. Averaged 15 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists on 56% shooting. He did not make a three. And you know what Duncan shot at the foul line the first 15 games of his NBA career? 44%.
Now, so a little bit less than what Chet's shooting from three.
Right. So, and I looked up Shaq, who was
a beast,
as you remember, dominant from day one. In Shaq's first month as a rookie in 1992, he averaged 37 minutes a game. Okay, ready for this? 24 points, 16 rebounds, 1.5 assists, shot 55% from the field, which is pretty close to what Chet is doing on a lot longer shots.
People don't remember how just ridiculous young he was. Shaq was
breaking multiple, like, he didn't backboards. Break the backboards, but he was like breaking the basket standard, like the basket standards that, you know, now it's the same in every arena. It didn't used to be the same, but the basket standards today were basically designed to handle Shaq because he kept breaking
Shaq proof.
Right. Let me look up LeBron's first month here in a second, but he shot 56% from the line. Did I say what Victor was shooting from the line? I'm not sure if I did. He's shooting 78% from the line.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the thing, obviously, Chet is in a situation where he has a chance to make an immediate impact in winning. And Victor doesn't have that chance. The Spurs, the plan's not to win now, and the potential's not to win now. It's just
right. I mean, we just laid out they're actively doing things that are not in their best interest. They know that Trey Jones is a better point guard than Jeremy Sochan right now.
They are in the early stages of a rebuild, and the Thunder are nearing the finishing touches of a rebuild. And part of the whole finishing touches of the rebuild was the whole Sam Presti basically saying, hey, patience. We want to see what we have here before we do any kind of, you know, big moves to get us over the hump, or, you know, the whole finish our breakfast first stuff that he says. But part of that is like, what if they have their stars in place? They've got a number one. Is Chet a number two? He might be that good. You know, talking to people in the summer, kind of what I heard was, hey, his impact early on is really going to be on the defensive end. And here he is a month into his career, averaging 17 points on better than 50, 40, 90, making plays off, you know, attacking closeouts, bringing the ball up the floor. I mean, I think everybody understood he was a multi-skilled 7-footer. I don't think there was an anticipation he was going to be this good of an offensive player right away.
Well, and to me, no, go ahead, Brian.
Let's say LeBron's first month, 2003, 16.8 points per game, 6.7 rebounds, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, shot 40% from the field, 73% from the line. When you go fast forward, I don't remember the exact day in January when they got a point guard, but just for the month of February, because that's an easy split. So this is after he's got a point guard, 21 points a game. So give or take five more points a game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. So we averaged, you know, about 2 assists less per game, but 5 more points, shot 44% from the field. So 4% higher. And so, like, and by the way, his plus minus was +1 in that first month. It was -4.
Also, by the way, that was 20
plus minus with Wimby right now.
It was also 20 years ago, by the way. And right now, LeBron James, who's currently just got beasted into the basket by Alperen Şengün for a layup with 4 seconds to go to tie the game, is currently the best player on the Lakers still. is trying to carry them to get another win. just truly remarkable that we're talking about this guy still.
That first month that LeBron played, Victor was not born yet. He was his mother was pregnant with him. He was born in January of LeBron's rookie year.
Yeah, by the way, Chet, plus minus for the year, plus 73. That is the best of all rookies. Any guesses on who number two is?
We talked about it earlier, so I know.
No, but, you don't. Oh. I told you who was in the lead before.
The second best plus minus of all rookies.
Of all rookies. Wimby's not last. He's 64th out of 65th. A solid is minus 99. Wimby's minus 97.
Who's last?
Asar Thompson.
Asar Thompson's two worst.
He's playing for the Pistons. By the way, he's a dude.
He'd be first team all rookie right now.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
he had 10 rebounds today.
He's had a really good start. One of the few bright spots in a rough Pistons start. I'm going to guess Keontae George because he's played well as a point guard, but I'm sure it's not him.
No, he's down the list. It's a lottery pick. Come on. If you see Chet, you probably see this guy.
Who's the Thunder's other lottery pick?
Cason Wallace.
Cason Wallace.
Yeah. Right.
By the way, he's having a really good year too. He's really interesting. He's 62.5% from the floor, 54.2% from 3-point range, just 9-9 from the line, but 100% from the line. Super efficient. A really, really good rotation player right away. And his future is going to be very interesting. He's got a chance to be a high-level starter sooner than later.
Well, Cason Wallace got a bump on it today because he was plus 19 today.
Derek Lively, when I looked this up yesterday, he was number one. He's now number three after a tough performance against DeMontis Sabonis and the Sacramento Kings. But he's plus 45 and has been so much better than the Mavericks anticipated when they drafted him as far as immediate impact.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, I've got a little trivia question here for you. So, Victor... Okay. The game that he played on Saturday, which was a loss to the Grizzlies, a bad home loss.
The Spurs can't have bad losses.
Giving up like a 27-5 run to start the fourth quarter, I would say is pretty bad.
So he had 19 points, 13 rebounds, and 8 blocks. By the way, opponents are shooting 41% in the paint against him when he's the defender. That's the second best amongst players to contest 75 field goals in the paint so far this year, with AD being second going into tonight's game.
Oh, he's better than the other Frenchman?
I guess so. That's what Stats Williams says. Okay. All right. So the last rookie with at least 10 rebounds, 15 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 blocks in a game. The last rookie, and I will tell you that it was a number one overall pick.
Yao Ming.
Good guess. You're in the right era. Wrong name, but good guess.
Duncan, then?
Tim Duncan did have 8 blocks in the game as a rookie, but he didn't have 15, 10, and 8.
David Robinson.
David Robinson also had 8 blocks as a rookie, but did not have 15 and 10.
I was just assuming that Yao Ming. I was going to say the other Rockets center and say Akeem, but I figured that was not the same era as Yao.
Ralph Sampson.
No, I will give you one hint. This player is currently a general manager in the NBA. Former player.
Elton Brand?
That's correct. First rookie with 15, 10, and 8 since Elton Brand, 1999.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You mentioned Derek Lively, McMahon. We talked in the last pod about how, you know, you think the Mavericks might have benefited from, you know, maybe not finding that center in the offseason trade market. Mm-hmm. And certainly Lively has done some things that have been positive. But the Mavericks, I have a very hard time taking a team seriously that ranks in the bottom three, really in the bottom 10.
Yeah, listen, the Mavericks and the Indiana Pacers are very, very similar. Elite, awesome offensive teams cannot stop a nosebleed. And honestly, they're like, I think the Suns are going to be similar. The Suns aren't a good defensive team. They're going to score a ton of points when their guys are healthy. They're at least their two main dudes, and they're going to give up a ton of points. And I think, you know, the Kings are trying to get out of that mix. That's what the Kings were last year. And the Kings were, they were a combination of awesome enough offensively and Cajones factor, player of the year, De'Aaron Fox as a closer, allowed them to be a number three seed with that formula. But it's a tough formula.
Well, let me tell you a little something about the Mavericks. Now, this is before today's game. This is all compiled in the wake of their loss to the Bucks. They rank last in the league in field goal percentage allowed on layups and dunks this season. Giannis on Saturday. Now, look, I know Giannis is a tough standard. Giannis had 32 points in the paint.
They allow over 50 points per game in the paint. They've had two games this year where they've allowed 72 points in the paint. And the problem is, it's not rim protection. It's blow by, blow by, blow by, because there the problem is they give up a lot of wide open threes. And those two things are directly related.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically the same team as the Milwaukee Bucks on the perimeter. The difference is the Bucks have Giannis and Brooke inside, which is why their defense is middling and the Mavs defense is terrible, right? Well, I mean, that's the difference. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Derek Lively can't be expected to solve that problem by himself.
For sure.
But what are the Mavs going to do about that?
Well, this is the problem about this has been the inherent issue with trying to build a team around Kyrie and Luka from Jump Street. Like, you're just going to have to do what they did this summer. They did about as good as they could do with what they put around them this summer in the short term. But like, that's, you got to hope Derek Lively becomes an elite defensive center, and you've got to have as much 3-and-D talent around them as humanly possible to make up for their shortcomings, because they're not going to stop many people. They're just
right.
Not.
And you look at their summer additions, Grant Williams, a good defensive player. He's a smart, tough, play hard, good defensive system player. He's not a stopper. You're not throwing Grant Williams at the other team's number one option and saying, hey, this is your assignment tonight.
He can do that on occasion. He can't do it every play for game after game after game. That's not what you're having him do. Right. He's a cog in the machine who can hit threes.
You know, Derek Jones Jr. has been a heck of a value pickup for them at the minimum, but like, they don't have anybody you call a stopper, right? And then Lively is 19. He's 19 years old. The fact that he has contributed as much as he has as a teenager is incredible, especially like he was raw. He did not play much at Duke last year. Again, they got him thinking, wow, this kid is a massive talent, but he is a project. And just the progress he made from the end of summer league to the start of camp, they were like, whoa, he's going to be ready to help us a lot more than we thought. And he has. And, you know, talking to their coaches, You know, I ask them, hey, how do you grade Lively defensively now? And kind of what I get back is, you know what? By the standards of a starting center in the NBA right now, he's okay. He's all right. Which for a teenager to be okay as a starting center is like miles ahead of what can be expected. So he's okay now with the potential to be like awesome, like elite, you know, all defense type of guy. It's not, he's not going to make that leap this year. Hopefully he's, and J.K. was talking about this tonight, hopefully he's significantly better in 2 months than he is now. But like, no 19-year-old kid is going to be able to prop up a bad defense by himself. It's just not reasonable. It's just correct. Not reasonable. And they are a blow-by factory on the perimeter.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the inability to have even put up even a cursory fight in the paint is beginning to undercut their start. And you wonder how far it's going to undercut them as it goes on.
Yeah. And it gets back to, listen, am I saying that the Mavericks should be considered one of the best teams in the Western Conference? I don't think so, because I just don't think this defense is good enough to be in that category.
Well, no, right, like we've talked about the whole time, the goal was to get into the playoffs again. Like, if they're in the playoffs, that's a win. Nobody should be expecting them to be a real contending team. Like, that was not the kind of leap that was realistically in the cards. If they could finish sixth, if they could guarantee themselves a top six spot and not have to be in the play-in tournament, that'd be a very significant step forward from where they were last year with the growth of Derek Lively, with integrating Grant Williams, with Josh Green getting more playing time and playing well. Like that, all right, then you're talking about some young guys that are playing well. You take a step forward. You then add next summer. That is a tangible sign of growth. Anybody looking at this team thinking they're as good as even, like obviously you saw tonight, they play Sacramento. They're not as good as Sacramento. They're not as good as, you know, certainly Denver. Like they're hoping to be sixth. That will be a big win for them.
Well, right now, the team in 10th in the West is the Golden State Warriors, who have lost six in a row. They're 6-8 now for the season. During that losing streak, so you take every team in the league's last six games, the Warriors ranked 27th in offensive efficiency. They ranked 29th in field goal percentage. They ranked 27th in three-point field goal percentage. Steph missed a couple of the games with a sore knee. Draymond has served one game of his suspension thus far. Klay Thompson has been just in the throes of a slump. These are the shooting of his last five games, starting with the Oklahoma City loss, 5 of 13. Before that, the first game against Oklahoma City, 1 of 10. Minnesota game, he got ejected 2 minutes in, the chokehold game. So he took one shot and missed it. First game against Minnesota, 5 of 16. First game against, or the game against Cleveland, 5 of 16. He is averaging 14 points and shooting 40% flat now on the season, just 33% from three-point range. He is not the only thing that's going on. We talk about a collapse of their offensive firepower. He is right there. We've talked about this before. The situation is not improving to this point. They've been slightly better defensively. Last year, as you remember, they were horrible defensively for much of the year on the road, particularly. They were actually pretty good at home. Their defense has actually been better than their offense. It's still in the bottom half, but less of a culprit to the fact that they just can't score. And it's, you know, this is a team that's, you know, highly invested in this season with what they're spending. They're highly, highly invested in this season. So look, I don't know what to say about this that we haven't already said, Bontemps, but it's, you know, in that overtime against, against the Thunder, they went 2 of 11.
It's premature to panic. It just is.
Yeah, I agree, of course. But it's not premature to say that, you know, they're really in a tough rut right now.
No, there's red flags. And I think the Klay one is the most concerning. Having said that, he got off to a really poor start last year and then was like suddenly prime Clay came around the corner and wasn't able to keep it going in the playoffs. But, you know, we saw that happen. Wiggins, that's why even though they ended up losing the game to Oklahoma City, if that's like Wiggins' arrival to this NBA season, that is huge because he has been so bad up until that game. They need him to be not necessarily an all-star. They don't need the PR staff to get him into another all-star game, but they sure as hell need him to be a very good player to have a chance of being anything more than play-in fodder. To make as many threes in one game as he had the rest of the season put together, and you know, maybe he's a guy who, whether it's health issues or whatever, maybe he kind of needs that early season to ramp up after kind of, I don't want to say coasting in the summer, but not being able to go maybe as hard as he wants in the summer. Maybe he needs that first month of the season to ramp up. That's the hope, because if the first month of the season is a sign of what's to come with Wiggins, they are absolutely cooked.
Yeah, that's why to me, I mean, I think it's – definitely time to be panicked to some degree with the Warriors. Yes, a lot of it you could point to Clay and Wiggins have been bad, and they've been bad going back to the start of the preseason. So if they start to play better, that will certainly help. I think the concern is you're 6-8. Steph Curry has been unbelievable through the first month. He basically hasn't missed any time. He's missed a game or two, but he's pretty much been healthy. You know, at some point, just because of the way he plays and he's not exactly the biggest guy, he's going to miss a handful of games at some point this year. And whenever he's that out there, their offense has no prayer of doing anything.
Well, and, no, it's not with CP3. It's not the cliff that they used.
Well, yes, to a point, except he hasn't been able to hit a shot either. Now, again, I don't think all these guys are going to just cumulatively not make any shots all season. I think they'll start to hit shots. I think Golden State will be fine. But the problem is you're digging yourselves a hole. And the whole thing for them all summer was we want to get off to a great start. We don't want to get ourselves in a hole again and have to be climbing out of it all year. Now they're 6-8. They've got Houston on a back-to-back Monday night. They damn well better win that game. Rockets lost a real close one in L.A. tonight. Tough game at the end. They're going to be tired.
Oh, Dylan Brooks is going to be feisty after he got poked by that bear.
Well, you got that game. They have
he's
the
referencing
Suns.
The Clippers. It was an incredible shot of Russell. I think this is what you're saying, where Westbrook went up for a dunk and raked Dylan across the face. And there's a classic still shot of it.
Oh, I'm talking about the bear, LeBron. LeBron.
Oh. Right.
LeBron had 37, 6-8 tonight against.
I hadn't heard the numbers yet. I hadn't looked.
Now, Dylan Dylan took 21 shots. That's not a great sign, but he had 24 points.
Final minute of that game, Alperen Şengün scored, went right to the rim a couple times, including once through LeBron with about 5 seconds to go. And then LeBron got fouled to hit one or two to win the game. But anyway, they have Houston at home. They better win that game. They then have Phoenix. They have San Antonio, as we talked about, they're a disaster. They really need to win that game.
Yeah.
And then they have the Kings on Tuesday, and what will be the final game next Tuesday, the final game of the in-season tournament group play for them, and the final game of Draymond suspension. But, like,
and then
they've got
– Kings are trying to get to Vegas, baby.
But listen, they've got the Clippers. They've got the Clippers 3 out of 4 after that. They've got the Suns again. They've got Boston. Like, they've got Denver, Miami – Dallas to close the month of December. They got a lot of tough games.
Whoop-de-doo. Boston almost lost to Memphis tonight, and Denver got blown out by Cleveland.
Sure. Okay. they can't really afford to fall into a big hole, and they're already in 10th. And if they don't, like, let's say they slip up in this Rockets game, they go 1-3 in these next four. You're sitting at 7-11 at that point. You're already out of the top 10 in the West. Put you in the exact position they were afraid of being in all year, which was to have to be digging out of a hole the whole time.
Yeah,
and they wanted to be up in the top four and be comfortable and get out to a good start and get going. And instead, it's almost been an exact repeat of last year, with the only difference being they're just splitting up the wins and losses, and they're not just comically bad away from home.
I at least want to have my turkey and stuff, and before I start putting dirt on a dynasty, that's all I'm saying.
I would agree.
I'm not putting dirt on anything, but this is literally
you're not
what they
dirt. You're tinkle tinkle. USWB. This is USWB material. Here you go.
This is the situation. The Warriors spent all summer beating their chests, saying, hey, you know what we're not going to do this year? Get off to a crappy start. We're going to be good. We're going to come out playing well.
And they were six and two.
And now they're 6-8.
They fixed their biggest problem. They're winning on the road, baby.
Well, I would agree with you. I'd rather be late than early on the Warriors. I will say this, McMahon, you are correct about Klay Thompson. The first 3 weeks of the season last year, he was actually worse. He was shooting. He's 33.
I mean, there were people saying he was done this time last year.
He was shooting 33% and only averaging 12 points. And then he started playing better. And by midseason,
he finished hitting 300 threes.
That's right. Yeah. So that's a good point. All right. Couple things here. Coming up this next week on Wednesday, we will have our third annual Friendsgiving podcast, our long, extra long pod for your travel over Thanksgiving Wednesday, and only two pods next week, but we're going to have our third annual Friendsgiving. And so we're still working up some of the folks that'll be on for that, talking about a wide range of stuff. And as a reminder, we will have our first Hoop Collective live show Friday, December 8th in Las Vegas at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club at the Link, right there on the Strip. There is going to be a link for tickets going out on social media. I mean, there's Jackson. Am I supposed to read this Bitly link? Is that what I'm supposed to do to get you the Ticketmaster link, or should I just wait to have it on social media?
No, you can read the link.
All right. Well, it's bit.ly/WindyHoopVegas. That's the link. That's the Bitly link.
I did not approve that.
You better be careful. You won't get your free t-shirt.
Oh, probably has your picture on it. I'm not sure if I want it.
Me either. I don't even know what it looks like. All right. So that's the update on that. Take a look at that. You can get your tickets. I'm sure they'll go outrageously fast.
I'm sure they will. By the way, we had a whole discussion about the rookie of the first month that we never said who we would take as rookie of the month. So Wendy? I think we should probably say.
You have a vote.
Make a vote.
They are both your discoveries, we realize, but it also is a fake vote that doesn't mean anything. So you could just pick one.
Right now, obviously, I don't think anybody in good conscience could say anybody besides Chet.
On Tims?
I would also say Chet. And just to add one thing that we didn't talk about earlier, I think it's really not been discussed enough in the discussion about these guys that one of them is playing center full time and one of them is not playing center hardly at all. And the fact that Chet has come in and played center on this team right away, and we've talked about it a bunch of times, it's just a gigantic thing for the Thunder going forward. Probably one of the most important things I think that's happened in the league this year, that he's walked in and been this good right away at center and for the things that opens up for them. So Victor's great. He's going to be great. But I think, to me, the way he's impacted things at both ends at this point, it would have to be Chet. And if it continues this way, I think that'll be how it goes till the end, but we'll see.
I'll also go with the red shirt rookie.
All right. Well, I had this thing all nicely on a bow, but then we went backwards. Now we're going to put the bow back on. So
that's fine.
All right. So thank you for listening to the Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson. Thank you to Bontemson McMahon. We'll talk to you on Friendsgiving on Wednesday.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.